Now we're holding on Sadiq Umar Aleph, the seventh line. We've been learning about the whole thing of selling Nichsa Malug and Takonas Usha, whether the husband has the ability to block that sale. We've been dealing with that for a block and a half now. The last thing we pointed out was that we had two braises regarding the din of Shein v'ayin. We know the Torah says that if a person knocks out his Eved Kanani's eye or tooth or any one of a bunch of other Roshei Evarim, then the Eved goes free. The question is, what happens if you have Avodim that are Nichsa Malug? So as that Nichsa Malug, then the goof of the Eved belongs to the wife. The Peiros of the Eved, meaning, for example, the work that the Eved does, belongs to the husband. Which one of them, if he injures the Eved, is the Eved going to go free? We had one Braisa saying only if the wife injures him, and the other one says neither one. So we discussed why those Braisas would be disagreeing. One possibility was about the matter of Takonas Usha, and then the Gemara went into a few other possibilities, in what ways the Braisas would be arguing, one of them being that they're arguing on the point that we talked about the other day, Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf. Do we say that the husband who owns the Peres of this Eved is considered as though he has an ownership of the Guf of the Eved, or would we say that no, the wife has the exclusive ownership of the guf, and therefore, as far as we're concerned, she's basically the only owner of the Eved, and in that case, then the first braisa would take that view, therefore it says that if she injures the Eved, he goes free, whereas the second braisa would be taking the view that neither one is really considered the full owner of the Eved, either in effect, they're sort of considered partners, and therefore that neither one has the ability by himself injuring the Eved to cause the Eved to go free. So now the Gemara says, if we understand the Machlokas that way, it would plug the Dehani Tanoi. Then we can say that the Machlokas of those two Braises is the same as the following Machlokas Tanoim on another matter involving Avodim. Now, we have like this. The Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim that if a person hits his Eved Knani Bashevet with a stick, so we're talking about, in other words, and the Rambam stresses, we're not talking about, for example, so like this, if a person hits his Eved, then if the Eved dies, he's Chayev Misa. It's an Eved Knani, but nevertheless, an Eved Knani is Yeshnim Mitzvah Mitzvahs. Certain mitzvahs are applicable to him, as we learned the other day, and therefore he's considered to that extent like a regular yid, in the sense that if his master kills him, or anybody else for that matter, then he's Chayev Misa. However, the Torah carves out an exception for that and says, "Ach im yom o yemayim yamod." If the Eved survives for a day or two after the beating, then lo yukam. Then we don't punish the master ki chatzvayhu, because the Eved is his kesef. In other words, to a certain extent, after all, a master has the right to hit his Eved. But Rambam, by the way, when he brings this halacha, stresses that that's why the pasuk says that he hits him bashevet, meaning with a stick, the normal kind of thing that a master might hit an Eved with. He says no, you know, for example, if the master took a sword, let's say, and struck the Eved with it, then there's no yoyim or yemayim, then he's chayiv misa, even if the Eved died only a long time after that. Anyway, the point is, there is this concept called Yoyim HaYemayim, that the master of the Eved himself, Yoyim HaYemayim, by the way, means a day or two, Rashi explains on the Pasuk, based on the Gemara, that what it means is the Eved has to survive for at least 24 hours. Yoyim means a day, Yemayim means, in other words, that it's 24 hours, where part of it is on one day and part on the next day. Anyway, the point is, the Torah is saying that exemption, that if a person hits his Eved in a way where a master would normally hit his Eved, and the Eved falls ill, but then he survives for at least 24 hours, then the master is potter from Misa. But if he had died within 24 hours, then the master would be chayiv Misa for it. So now we're going to talk about that din of Yoyim or Yomayim. The same way as when it comes to Shein V'ayin, we have to distinguish between the master versus anybody else. The same way here, we also have to consider who is the Eved master. So to Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hamosha Avdel Acher. If somebody sells his Eved to somebody else, or Posik Imay Amanashi Sham Shenu Shloshim Yoyim, he makes a deal that I'm selling you this Eved, however, I'm going to still continue having him work for me for another 30 days. So 30 days from now, the Eved will be, the Eved will start working for you. Right now, he's your asset in the sense that you could resell him or you could whatever, but for the next 30 days, I'm reserving for myself his work. What happens during those 30 days if one or the other of them beats him? So the mayor says the first master is the one who's going to have the special exemption of Yoyma Yemaim of Neshu Tachtav because the Eved is still working for him. Therefore, the Gemara interjects, Kasava Kinyan Peres Kikinyan Agufdom. Evidently, then, the mayor is one, it holds that Kinyan Peres is Kikinyan Aguf. Therefore, the master owns the Peres at this point because the Eved is working for him and that's the Peres of the Eved. So he's the one who gets the Yoyma Yemaim exception, but the second one would not, because the second one doesn't, because the second one is not actually having him work for him yet. Now Tosfos points out that before, when we had the matter of freeing the Eved by Shein and Ayin, that was different, because there what we can say is, we said neither one is able to free him, because the wife has the Kinyan Aguf, and the husband doesn't have the ability, so his Kinyan Peres blocks the ability to, because he has Kinyan Peres, and a mayor holds Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf, therefore that prevents the freeing of the Eved for Shein V'Ayin, and vice versa, the husband can't free the Eved by him injuring her because she has the Kinyan Aguf. Here, where it's a matter of, Tosfos says, it's a Svara. After all, the whole idea behind Yoyma Yemayim is that the master has the right to beat the slave, to get him to do his work. So therefore, it's more logical that the one for whom the mayor would say, the one for whom the slave is currently working, is the one who has the din of Yoyma Yemayim. With that said, though, Tosfos also brings a different girsa and understands that no, actually, according to the mayor, when we said before, at the end of yesterday's Gemara, we said that both Tanoim of both Braises that we learned yesterday might hold Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf might hold that we hold. So we said that both of them might hold of Takonas, that neither one would hold of Takonas Usha, and they were arguing on Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf. Tosfos brings that actually no, we might say that both of them agree with Takonas Usha, and we're saying that one Braisa is like the mayor and the other one is like Rabbi Eliezer, who we're going to learn soon, and the mayor himself. So Tosfos has a different Girsa earlier, in short, that it comes out that maybe that according to the mayor, we would in fact, the mayor might say consistently what he says over here, the same way as he says over here, the one for whom the Eved is working is the one for whom, is the one who has the din of Yoyma Yemayim, that one would also be the one who's able to free him with Shein V'Ayin, meaning unlike what we learned yesterday, that neither the husband nor the wife is able to cause the Eved to go free, we might say that we might have the choice for springs. We might have a different Girsa in the Gemara from which it would come out that the mayor would say that the master, that the husband, if he injures him with Shein V'Ayin, can cause the Eved to go free. And then it would be consistent with what we're saying over here. But if not, then again, Tosfos is saying there is a reason to differentiate, because there you can say that each one's kinyan blocks the other one from setting him free, whereas here we're not talking about setting him free. We're talking about being potter from punishment for killing him, and then we can say the one for whom he's currently working has that special term. Anyway, that's Reb Meir. Continues the Gemara. Rabbi Yehuda on the Sheni Yeshna Medinya Yoyma Yemayim Mepeshu Kaskoi. Rabbi Yehuda says the other way around, that the second one, the one to whom the Eved was sold, is the one who has the din of Yoma Yemayim, because he's Kaspoy, because he's the actual monetary property of the second one. The first one only has him working for him temporarily. So therefore, Kasava Kinyan Peres Lavka Kinyan Aguf Drami. So he holds that Kinyan Peres is not the Kinyan Aguf. Therefore, the first one who only has Peres at this point, because the Eved himself, he sold to the other guy, then he doesn't have the tour of, then he doesn't have the tour of Yoyma Yemayim, because he doesn't actually own the Eved anymore, only the second one does, and therefore it would be the second one who gets that tour. Then the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yosi Yom Shneim Yeshin Bidin Yoyma Yemayim, both of them have that exemption of Yom Yomayim, Zem Pneshu Kachtov, Zem Pneshu Kachtov, because the first one hasn't working for him, the second one hasn't as Kachtov. So the Gemara explains, Misap Delay, Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf Domi, Kinyan Aguf Domi, Elab, Kinyan Aguf Domi. Rav Yossi says, that's Suffolk. We can't be sure whether Kinyan Peres is considered like Kinyan Aguf, and therefore the Suffolk Nefashis Lahokel, so therefore we have a Suffolk on Kinyan Nefashis, and therefore we have to be Maple. We can't, Basin will not be able to execute either one of them, where if he beat the Eved and he died within 24 hours, and he died within 24 hours, or he died after 20, if he dies within 24 hours, they are high missing no matter what, but rather that they can't execute either one of them if he beat the Eved and he died after 24 hours, because we can't be sure which one is actually considered to be his owner, which one has that pture of Yoyim or Yomayim, and therefore Rabbi Yossi says, Safik Nefashis Lahom. And the Gemara continues, yet another one, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, or Rabbi Lozer, it says on the side, it should be, Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lozer says, Shneim Einen Bidin Yoyim or Yomayim, neither one has the exemption of Yoyim or Yomayim, meaning that either one of them, if he beats the Eved, and the Eved dies, even after 24 hours, whichever one beat him is going to be the one who's Chayiv Misa, says Rav Eliezer. Zela Fisha Eina Tachtav, Zela Fisha Eina Kasvoy. Because the opposite. He's not Tachtav. The one of them, he's not Tachtav. He's not actually, with the second one, he's not working for him yet. And the first one, he's not Kasvoy anymore. So therefore, neither one is his exclusive owner, and therefore you don't have, and the Patur of Yoyma Yomayim would only be for an exclusive owner. Okay. So the Gemara says, so the point being, in other words, that the Meir and the Yehuda, the first two Tanoim over here, are arguing on the point of Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf, and therefore we see that the earlier Brises that also talked about, the fact that the Eved goes free with Shein Ra'ayin can also reflect those. One way of understanding it is that those two Brises can reflect this distinction, whether we say Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf, the one that says that not, would say therefore the husband has no ownership of the Eved at all. Therefore, if he injures him, there's no Shein Va'ayin. Only if the wife does, and the other one would say Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf. Either both of them are considered the owners of the Eved, and therefore neither one injuring him causes him to go free. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav, my time is Rav Eliezer. Why does Rav Eliezer say that? The other opinions we can understand. Either they hold Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf or not, or Rav Yossi is saying there's a Suffolk. But why is Rav Eliezer saying that neither one has that Patur at all, and therefore either one can be killed by Beis Din for killing the Eved? Why? The answer is Amar Krok Ki Chaspoi Hu, because the pasuk says, why is it that the master is potter if the Eved lives for 24 hours? Because the pasuk says Ki Chaspoi Hu, because he is his money, which implies Chaspoi Am Yuchad Loi. That implies it could have said Ki Kesef Hu. That implies that it has to be that he's his exclusive money, his exclusive property, and therefore, and here it's not because. And here it's not, because the fact is that either one of them has that both of them have a claim on the Eved. So the Gemara in Baba Basra discusses this also, and it discusses how Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda also understand it, and they also have Jerushas from Psukim, although Tosfos explains over there, and Tertas Chaim explains over here, that they're not really arguing on the Jerushas of the Psukim. After all, each one has to realize there is a word in the Pasuk that implies the other one's opinion. Fundamentally, as the Gemara is saying over here, Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda are arguing about this matter of Kinyan Peres, Kinyan Aguf or not. And again, also Tosfos goes and compares this with the previous part about Shein Va'ayin, about why. So again, why is it before we were saying that apparently Rav Meir would agree that by Shein Va'ayin, you wouldn't say that the husband injuring the Eved causes him to go free, where here Rav Meir is saying that the one who he's actually working for has the din of Yoyim or Yomayim. So again, like we talked about, Tosfos discusses either that there's a different girsa, or that Rav Meir would draw a distinction between them because of the logic of who Yoyim or Yomayim is supposed to apply to. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Kiman Osla Hoda Omer Amemer. Now, according to which of these opinions does it go, just that Amemer says, Ish v'isha shemochra b'nichsim alug. Here we've been talking about all this time, we've been talking about the nichsim alug, about if the wife sells them, whether the husband can prevent that sale or not, and get it back, since he has the paytas. But Amemer is saying, even if the husband and wife sold the nichsim alug, and Rashi explains, even if it means that they both jointly agreed to sell it, what they did doesn't count for anything. Kiman to Rabbi Eliezer. Necessarily, that would have to be like Rabbi Eliezer of that would have to be like Rabbi Eliezer of the Braisa that we just said, because Rabbi Eliezer is saying again that that you have to have, in order to have the din of Yoma Yomayim, it has to be that he's the exclusive property of one or the other of them. And in the case of the Evet and the 30 days, he's not. Well, by the same token, then. By the same token, then, if by the nichsim alug, where you have the same kind of thing, one of them owns the wife owns the guf, the husband owns the peiros, then we would say the same kind of thing, that neither one is considered the owner of it, and therefore that we would say that even both of them together can't sell. So Tosfos points out that what Amemer is doing is he's learning the fact that the part he's learning about, he's not learning from the din of Yoma Yomayim, really, that we just said. He's learning it from the part of Shichrur, about freeing an Eved, that the Gemara is going to talk about in a minute, about a case where involving partners who own an Eved, how the Eved goes free, as we talked about before, and as the Gemara is going to bring another Braisa in a minute. Now, Rashi over here is saying, we're talking about even when the husband and wife together went and sold the property, that Amemar is saying it wouldn't work. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn that, no, what we mean is, if one of them sold it, and then the other one sold it, so then it wouldn't work, because when one of them sold it, it wasn't a valid sale, and then the other one is only doing it in order to not get into a fight with the other one or something, but if they would, the Rivet learns that if they were to both go jointly, then it would be good. The Rambam also passes, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that if both of them sell the nichsim alug together, it is a valid sale. And the various mefoshim and various nosikalim deal with exactly how that is, how the Rambam would understand that in the light of the Gemara over here, where the Lacha Mishnah talks about it, and there's other mefoshim that talk about that there would be a distinction, even though Amemar is equating it and saying that according to Rabbi Eliezer, where there's no Yoma Yomayim, where the person is not the exclusive owner of an Eved, then we can't say that he has the dinim of the master of that Eved, and Amemar is saying the same thing as far as Nixim Alug, but not necessarily based on other Gemaras and based on other considerations. We might say that that's not universally agreed to, and therefore we could say that even if we learn like Rabbi Eliezer, and the Rambam does pass them like Rabbi Eliezer as far as the Eved, nevertheless we could say that that doesn't necessarily apply if they're both selling the Nixim Alug, because there is the difference. By the Eved, you do need exclusive ownership. By the Nichsim Alug, it's enough that the two of them together, between them, they have the complete ownership, are agreeing to sell it. So there are various Mephoshim that talk about that point. Okay. So it's not, even though Amemar was saying that you can compare it, but based on other Gemaras and based on other considerations, Acharonim talk about that there may after all be a distinction between them. Okay. What about, the Gemara says, Man Tana Laha the Tana Rabbanan? What about which Tana is the author of the following Braisa? Misha Chetzi Eved B'Chetzi Ben Chorin, an Eved who's a person who's half free and half, and by the way, also before we get to that, actually, Rashi points out the reason why. Now the question is, what about, let's say you have a regular case where something belongs to two partners, they can agree jointly to sell it. Why over here by the Nichsim Alug are we saying that not? That even though the husband and wife in effect are partners in it, nevertheless they can't sell it. And again, Rashi is learning even if they both come at the same time and want to sell it. The reason is Rashi says because when it comes to a regular partnership, each one owns the whole thing. Eventually, when they split it, each one is going to have only half. But in principle, each one owns the whole thing, and when they divide it, each one is going to get half of it. Here, you have she owns the complete goof. He has no part of the goof. She owns the complete goof. He has no part of it. He owns the complete payas. She has no part of it. So therefore, it's not miyuchad loylozeh veloylozeh, and therefore it wouldn't work. In which case, Tosfos says, the case that now we're going to talk about, an Eved of Shnei Shutvin, or the Chetzi Eved, the Chetzi Ben Chordan, evidently we would have to be talking about a similar kind of thing that, since the Gemara is comparing them, then we would have to say, when we talk about Eved Shal Shnei Shutfin, again, it would have to be like before, for example, that it means that one of them owns the Peiros and one owns the Guf, and in the case of Chetzi Eved, the Chetzi Ben Chordan, it would have to be, in other words, that all the money has been paid, but the Get Shichru hasn't been given yet. Otherwise, it's not exactly comparable, because otherwise it would be like a case of if you have two people jointly own an Eved, and either one can use the Guf, and either one can use the Peiros, then that wouldn't be the same kind of thing, like Rashi is saying, and there's no reason why they shouldn't both jointly be able to sell him. So Bryce says, Misha chetzi eved b'chetzi ben chorin. So a person who's half free and half slave, b'chein eved shal shnei shukfin, in the same way an eved who belongs to two partners, ein yotzin b'rosh e'varim, they do not go free with rosh e'varim. Again, if either one of them knocks out his eye or his tooth, or any of the 24 rosh e'varim, these tips of limbs that never regenerate, so he wouldn't go free if either one injures him by that. Which Tana of the four Tanoim that we said before would hold that? Omelet of Mordechai le Ravashi. So the Mordechai tells Ravashi, Hochi Amim Shmei the Rava, Rebel Yezer. They said in the name of Rava that this Braisa also would be according to Rebel Yezer. Just like Rabbi Eliezer said before about the din of Yoima Yemayim, that the Eved has to belong exclusively to the master in order for the din of Yoima Yemayim to operate, because the pasuk says Kaspoi, that it's his, that it has to be his money. Hochanami Avdei Ami Yuchad Loi. The same way the Eved has to be completely the same way. When the pasuk says v'chiyake ish es ein avdoi or yes ein amosoi, then the same thing. It has to be his exclusive Eved, and in this case, it's not exclusively the Eved of either one of them. So this brisa that says that neither one, whether the one has kinyan peiros, one has kinyan aguf, for example, or Chetzi Eved v'Chetzi Ben Chorin, where the Eved is essentially already free, all the money's been paid for him, as Tosfos says, all that's missing is a Get Shichru, and now the master injures him and causes him to lose the Shein or Ayin or whatever, he wouldn't go free, because now he's not Kaspoi Ham Yuchad Loi anymore. That could only be, Rava is saying, that would only be according to Rabbi Eliezer. Because Rabbi Eliezer, again, is saying that when it comes to Yoyma Yomayim, also, you're doubting in the same way. Kaspoi means I'm Yuchad Loi. It has to be his exclusive ownership.
So if he doesn't go free, does he have to pay for his wounds?
Would he have to pay for his wounds? So we learned before, since the Eved Kanani is the property of the master, then no, he doesn't have to pay him anything. And there are various Rishonim that talk about what about according to the opinions, what about according to the three other opinions, or Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yossi, what would happen in this case? Tosfos before explains that maybe according to Rabbi Yehuda, we would say the one who has the Kinyan Aguf would be the one who causes them to go free with the Shein Bayin. And then, according to the other Gusa and Tosfos, the one who has Kinyan Peiros is the one who causes them to go free, and then Rabbi Yehuda would be the one who says the one who has Kinyan Aguf. And the Ravid brings that actually either one would free his part, meaning if you have one of them owns the Guf and the other one owns the Peiros, according to the Ravid learns that according to the Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, you would say the one who owns the Peiros, if he injures the Eved, causes that now the Peiros can't be used by anybody else anymore. The Eved now owns those. So in other words, he owns his own work from now on. So he could still be sold to somebody else, but the work would still belong to him. And then vice versa, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the one who owns the Kinyan Aguf would be the one who causes the Guf to go free. So different ways of explaining how the other Tanoim would hold, but in any case, the point is that Rava is saying Rabbi Eliezer would be the Rabbi Lazar, as we said before, would be the one who says that no, he doesn't go free at all with Shein V'ayin because he has to be cast by Amiyuchad Loi. When the Guf goes free, no, because it means, in other words, that the other guy still owns his work. Like now he has to pay him for his work. Maybe he has to work for him. Well, I don't know exactly. Yeah. Okay. Now, getting back now to matters of chavolos, of injuries and the payments for them. Now, we learned earlier in the perek that you have five things, nezek, tzar, ripui, shevis, and boshes. So the Mishnah says, hatekeya l'chaveroi, if a person is tekeya, somebody else, nosen lo sela, then he pays him a sela. Rashi gives two possibilities of tekeya. One is that he hits him in the ear, in English it's called, he boxes his ear. And the other explanation, Rashi says, is that he actually blew or yelled into the guy's ear. The Rambam gives another understanding that it has nothing. The Rambam gives another understanding that has nothing to do with the ear. Means that he punched him in the back of the neck. So then, nosen lo sela, he gives him a sela. Because so Rashi explains because of the boshes, where the implication is, in other words, if in addition there was and Rashi actually learns earlier in the Masechta where we also had this Mishnah was brought. Rashi learns over there that the seller is only for the boshes. If in fact there were other things as well, if it was a hard enough blow that it actually caused nezek or tsar or what have you, then in addition he would have to pay for those. On the other hand, the Rambam learns that not. The Rambam learns these kinds of things that we're going to mention in the Mishnah over here. The payment that the Mishnah is mentioning is meant to cover everything. The Chachamim figured out that a case of tekeya l'chaveroi, the typical nezek and tsar and so on and so forth, is going to equal a sela, and therefore that's the amount he has to pay. No, we're talking about to a regular year. No, here we're not talking about an eved anymore. New Mishnah. Yeah. Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Mishum, Rabbi Yosef Aglili Mone, Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Yosef Aglili, says he doesn't give him a sela, he gives him a mone, which is 100 zuz equal to 25 sloim. So not one sela, but 25. Continues the Mishnah. Sotiroi, if he slapped him, like in the face, noisam I must sign zuz, then he has to pay 200 zuz for the boshes. Yeah. La'acha yoda, and if he slaps him with the back of his hand, which is an even bigger boshes, noisam like Arameus zuz, then he pays him 400 zuz. Other examples. Soram ba'oznoi, if he soram the other guy's ear, and here also Rashi says, two possibilities. One is that soram means he pulled the guy's ear, and the Rambam says similarly, means that he twisted his ear. A second explanation, Rashi says, is that he nicked the guy's ear. Anyway, that's a very big humiliation. Or tolosh besayre, he pulled on his hair. Or rokak v'igia b'rukoi, or he spit at the guy and the spit landed on the other guy. Or hever talis enimenu, or he took off the other guy's talis from him. So now, in other words, so the talis is an overgarment. He's still wearing the, so it's not really an overgarment, I should say. It's like the equivalent of a shirt and pants nowadays. So in other words, he's leaving him in the street wearing, in underwear. The Meiri says all the more so if he actually took off, if it would be more like, in other words, without the talisa, in other words, the guy is standing over there in his ksonas or whatever the equivalent is. His body is covered, but he's still wearing only one garment. Meiri points out all the more so if he actually took off his clothing and exposed his skin. Anyway, so then, and another one, Pora Roisha Isha Bashuk, another one, if it was a married woman and he uncovered her head in the street, so then, noisim like Arameus zuz, in all those cases, he has to pay 400 zuz. Zach, well, now the general rule is, hakolafi kvodai, everything goes according to the kavod of the person to whom the boshes was caused. Now the Gemara is going to discuss, we'll learn tomorrow, Baz Hashem, what does that mean? Does it mean that the amounts we set in the Mishnah are for the simple person, but then if it's a more bekavadika person, then you have to pay more? Or does it mean the other way around? The amounts in the Mishnah are for the most bekavadika person, and for a lesser person, you might pay less. So we'll talk about that in the Gemara tomorrow, Baz Hashem. Anyway, Omer Rav Akiva, but Rav Akiva says you don't go according to the person's covered. We learned this earlier in the parak. Afilu aniim should be Yisrael. Even the poorest Jews, Royanosim, Kilem Bnei Chorin, should Yodim Nechseihem. We always evaluate in terms of the boshes, and in terms of the boshes, we always consider them to be the equivalent of rich people who became poor. And they still feel themselves to be rich and dignified. Shehem b'nei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, because after all Jews are the children of Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, and therefore we have to evaluate them all the same way. Now, we learned, when we learned this expression a few days ago, first of all, we had an explanation that said on the Gemara, we had an explanation that means the Raivan had said that it meant that actually, according to that opinion, we also have to be Mako on the Mevayesh, because the Mevayesh himself is also a Ben Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. So therefore, we don't want to go too hard on him. So we had over there Reb Shimon saying that when it comes to rich people, we consider them only as though kilem b'nei chon sheyodim b'nechseim, and poor people we consider kipchusin shebehem, meaning Reb Shimon had said we want to be makel in all cases on the mazik. Here Reb Akiva is using the expression somewhat differently. We want to be more dignified towards the nizek, towards the nisbayish, even though that means making the other guy pay more. Rashi had also pointed out over there, by the way, that you don't consider a rich person based on his riches, because then Emad Avasek, we said a person might say that I'm rich, I'm not willing to accept such humiliation for less than a million zuz, and we can't say that. On the other hand, the Meiri says over here that even appointed of Akiva, an actual rich person, you would have to evaluate more. Maybe not to the extent of a million, but based in would have to evaluate more. Anyway. So, continues the Mishnah. It happened once that a certain man did that. He uncovered a married woman's head in the street. So then, and the man, the Mishnah said, he has to pay 400 zuz. So, both lifnei Rav Akiva, she came to Rav Akiva for a din Torah, and sure enough, the chiva litin lo abba meir zuz. And Rav Akiva said that the guy has to pay 400 zuz. So the man says, Rebbe, ten li zman. So he says, Rebbe, give me some time to come up with the money. And that's reasonable. Beis Din will do that. And in most cases, they will give a person a certain amount of time to come up with the necessary money. But this guy was doing that in order to play a trick. He had no intention of paying the money, and he decided to do things in a way where he's going to play a trick and demonstrate that he shouldn't have to pay. So he waited. The word shomar can also mean to wait, like ba'aviv shomar as a davar. So he waited until he saw that until one time when she was standing by the entrance of her chatzer, the shomar as a kad before neha. Then he broke a jug of oil in front of her. Oboik iser shemen, and there was only an iser's worth. There was only about an iser's worth of oil in that jug, which is a very small amount of money. Gilsas Rosha, she uncovered her head, Vosamatapachas Manachas Yoda Al Rosha. She was taking the oil. Metapachas is like when you put your hand into a spilled liquid and you get some of it on your hand, and then she's taking that and putting it on her head. But she figures, why should the oil go to waste? The container is broken. Let me take some of that oil and put it on my head. People would use oil as sort of shampoo and other purposes like that to keep their skin soft. The Meiri brings another possibility that the metapachas, sometimes we find in the Gemara, metapachas also means when a person claps their hands in grief. So he explains that one possibility is that the container actually belonged to her. And therefore, in other words, when she saw that it's broken, she was like clapping her hands in sadness and grief over, look at that, my container and my oil is going to go to waste. But he says the fact that it says manachas yada arosha fits better with the first explanation, that it means that she's actually trying to use the oil rather than going to waste. Hemidalar edim, so he made sure that there were edim there to watch what was, to watch what was going on. And the guy comes to Rav Akiva. Omalei says, Lazu, Ani Noisin Dalad Meir Zuz. You're expecting me to pay this woman 400 Zuz? She herself had no problem uncovering her hair in public, and even just for a tiny amount, for an Isser of oil. Besides which, also, the fact that it was only an Isser of oil means also that she was poor. So he's saying, between all of that, why should I have to pay this enormous amount of 400 Zuz? So that was why. That was to begin with. He had asked for the time, the pashtus, in order to be able to set up this whole situation. Anyway, Omalei, Rav Akiva answers the guy, Loya Martaklum. What you said doesn't count for anything. It still doesn't help you. You're still going to have to pay the 400 zuz. It is true, for example, Achoivo Ba'atzmai. It's true, for example, that when a person injures himself, Afa Pisha Eni Rashoi, even though he's not allowed to, as we'll learn in the Gemara eventually why that is, Potter, nevertheless, a person injures himself. The fact is, he is Potter. he's potter from paying, because who is he supposed to pay? Nevertheless, and yet another person injures him or causes him, in this case, a boshes, then they're going to be chayim. So the same way, she wants to be mevayish herself, fine, that's her problem, but you are not allowed to be mevayish her, and you are responsible for paying that amount for the humiliation to her.
That's its point.
It's different whether a person does it himself or whether somebody else does it. Yeah. Similarly, Rabbi Akiva continues, v'akotzit niti Yosef. Similarly, for example, a person chops down his trees, even though, again, he's not allowed to, and he is, in fact, over on Baal Tashchis. Tosfos, in fact, points out later on, when we say that the Mishnah says potter, now we don't actually mean completely potter. He is actually going to be, he's going to be potter from paying. He may still get Malkus. He may still get Malkus because he's over on Baal Tashchis. So what we mean is potter in the sense that he doesn't have to pay for it. But nevertheless, achirim chayavim. But if somebody else chops down his trees, then they'd be chayav. So the same way, Rabbi Akiva is telling this guy, just because she did that doesn't mean that you have the ability to do that, and that you should be potter. No, you're still chayav the 400 zuz.
And he lost the jug.
And he lost the jug as well. Yeah. And according to the second explanation, that it was her jug, means he has to pay for that as well. Yeah. Okay. So the first thing that you want to ask Sibolu, when we talk about according to Rabbi Yosef Aglili, a mona, when we talk about the seller, the Gemara established earlier in the Masechta that the seller, that the Tanakhama says, is definitely talking about a seller medina. We learned before, we had a case, Rashi refers to a case that we had earlier in the Masechta, involving a guy called Chonan Bisha, bad Chonan, who went and then was tekea somebody, as we said, you know, he boxed him in the ear, or yelled in his ear, or punched him in the neck, or whatever, and they made him pay a Sela Medina, and we have the story over there in the Gemara. He only had like a very worn, now a Sela Medina is 1/8 of a regular Sela. You have a Sela Tzodi, is pure silver, and it's worth 4 zuzim. A Sela Medina is 1/8 silver and the rest copper, and therefore it's worth only 1/8 of a Sela Tzodi. So earlier the Gemara had explained that you have this case again involving Chonan Bisha. So he had, the Gemara mentions over there, he had only a worn out zuz, but he only has to pay a half a zuz. So what he did is he gave the guy another tekeya ba'oznoi and then gave him the entire zuz. As a half for one, half for the other. The point being, in other words, we see that it's not Sela Medina, otherwise he would have had to pay 8 zuzim, but rather it's not Sela Tzodi, otherwise he would have been paying 8 zuzim for the 2 times. Rather it's Sela Medina, and therefore he pays only 1 zuz. So that's for sure. When the Tanakhama says, well, no Sela, there's no question that it means Sela Medina. But when Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rabbi Yisag, really Mona, the question is, Mona Tzodi Tznan or Mona Medina Tznan? Are we talking about a Mona Tzodi? Or are we talking about a mona medina, which would be worth 1/8 of that? So the Gemara says, Toshma, we can bring a proof. Gahu gavred tokalei lachavre. There was a guy who did this tekeya lachavre. Also lakamei de Rabbi Yehuda Nesia, and the case came to Rabbi Yehuda Nesia. Omerle, and Rabbi Yehuda Nesia is the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanossi. We call him Nesia to distinguish him from his grandfather. He was one of the Uli Amiroyim, unlike Rebbe, was one of the last Tanoim. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda Nesia says, Amalei, ha anah ha Rabbi Yosef Aglili, here's me, and we'll see in the Gemara soon what he means by this, here's me, and here's Rabbi Yosef Aglili, havle monetzori, go give him a monetzori, shmamina monetzori tnan, shmamina. So that, wouldn't that prove that we give a monetzori, and in fact, yes, we can prove that that's how it is. Tosfos earlier in that Sylvia earlier on, Daf Lamed Vav, Lamed Zayin, points out, it seems very odd then. It comes out that the gap between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yosef Aglili is enormous. Because according to the Tanakhama, he's paying him only a Sela Medina, which is worth one Sodi Zuz. Here we're saying that he has to pay him, a Sela, a Mona Sodi. So it means, in other words, and a Sela Medina, Tosfos calculates, is only 1/200th of a Mona Tzodi. So if they're that big, why should there be that big a gap between them where the Tanakhama is saying that you're paying 1/200th of what Rabbi Yosef Agrivius is saying you'd pay? So Tosfos says that maybe, in fact, they're talking about a poor or a rich person, respectively. So we could say by a poor person, it's only by a poor person, then the Tanakhama, so they're not really arguing. Tosfos says maybe one is talking about a poor person, you'd pay him only a Sela Medina, and the other one is talking about a rich person, and you'd pay him according to Rabbi Yosef Agrivius, mona tzori. Then Tosfos says, actually, maybe they are, in fact, arguing, but still, we can say the original context that they were talking about, respectively, was a poor and a rich person. So now, we can say one of them was primarily talking about a poor person, and he says we apply that across the board. The other one's primarily talking about a rich person, but he says we apply it across the board. So there would be a machlokas, but originally, they would have been evaluating it based on poor and rich, respectively, because a rich person has greater boshas than a poor person. Okay. Anyway. So, my ha'ana ha'rab yeseh agrivi. What does Rabbi Yehuda Nesiya mean with this expression? He was me and he was Rabbi Yeseh agrivi. Ilei mehochika amalei, does he mean to tell this guy, ha'ana d'chazisicha, he was me, where I actually saw you be tekeh al-chaveroi, and the ha'rab yeseh agrivi d'alam monetzori, and we put that together with Rabbi Yeseh agrivi's opinion that says, that says that you have to pay a monetzori, and therefore we would say zil havle monetzori, and the result is, by combining those two things together, you have to pay a monetzori. So in other words, so are we assuming that Rabbi Yehuda Nesiya actually saw the guy do that, and therefore he's judging the case based on that? The problem with that is, lememra de'ed nasa dayan, does that mean that an aid who saw something happen can become a dayan on the very same thing? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa that's not so simple. Sanhedrin shirov echad tohara gesan nefesh. If the Sanhedrin themselves saw one person killing another, miktsasen nasu edim, miktsasen nasu dayanim. Then what happens is some of them can serve as edim and some of them can serve as dayanim. Divrei Reb Tarfon, and that's what Reb Tarfon says. So now, Reb Tarfon agrees with the concept that the Gemara says, ein eid nasa dayan. However, he understands it, he applies it a little differently. Not that a person who saw something can't be a dayan on it, but that you can't have, for example, that two of them are going to be standing in front of the Beis Din and give eidos, and then they're going to take their seat on the bench with the other dayanim. And then actually judge the case. Reb Tarfon says they can't do that. So let's say you have, you'd have to have, let's say, at least 25 of them, let's say. So you have two of them, then will serve as Adim, and 23 will serve as the Beis Din. Rashi actually, interestingly, mentions the point over here that Rashi mentions a little bit further on that you're talking about that there, say, for example, there were only three of them. So that would imply as though you could do Dini Nefashos with only three. You can't. You need 23. However, there are Rishonim who understand. The Ran understands Rashi to be meaning that actually, technically, of course, you need 23 in order to convict the guy and execute him. But what you could have is the Eidos can be given in front of three, and then they can go and report to the Beis Din of 23. So you don't need, in other words, according to that way of, according to Rashi's way of looking at it, according to that understanding of Rashi, it would come out. You don't actually need the full 23 to hear the Edim. It's enough that a Beis Din of 3 hears the Edim, and then they go and report their findings to the Beis Din of 23. Anyway, the point is, that Reb Tarfon says that in this case, if you have, let's say, at least 5 of them, or at least 25 of them, or whatever, then 2 of them can be Edim, and the rest of them can serve as Dayanim. The fact that they saw it happen doesn't disqualify them as Dayanim. But that's the point of Divrei Reb Tarfon. Reb Akiva and Mekulam Edim, and they ain't Ed Nasa Dayan. And Reb Akiva says all of them become Edim. Therefore, an Ed can't become a Dayan, and all of them apostle Edis. All of them apostle to judge this case. So, ad kan lekamer Reb Tarfon, although the mechsasu nasu edim, mechsasu nasu dayanim. Even Reb Tarfon is only saying that some of them can serve as edim, and some of them can serve as dayanim. Avol, ed nasu dayan lekamer. Even Reb Tarfon is not saying that a person can actually serve as an aid and then turn around and serve as a dayan. So how could we say that Reb Yehuda Nesiya saw this guy box the other guy's ear, or whatever Hatakeya Ba'oznei means exactly, and then we're going to say that he then sits as the dayan and judges the case? Even Reb Tarfon doesn't allow such a thing. Now Tosfos over here brings, and then the Gemara brings in various places, different reasons why that is. Why indeed, if he saw it himself, why indeed, if he served as an aid, can he not serve as a dayan? So one point is because the pasuk says v'omdu shnei ha'anashim lifnei Hashem, the edim have to stand in front of the beis din. That implies that the edim and the beis din are two different groups. So you can't have a person serve as an aid and then also serve as a dayan. That's one thing Tosfos points out. Another and then Tosfos discusses other points from which we learn. You have, for example, something as far as a din in the dinim of Yerusha that we can't say that when they hear a person is saying at night that I want to give out my Yerusha in such and such a way to my children, then we say that they can't afterwards go and sit as a beis din on it by day, because in other words it comes out they were only edim and now they can't become dayanim. Because by seeing it by night, they can't judge the din Torah at night. You don't judge the din Torah at night. So therefore, we see from that that Tosfos says also because it's going to be an edus shi'at at the yochel hazima. Because how can you be mazim if they themselves are the dayanim and they themselves are the edim? Tosfos doesn't like that explanation because so what? You can be mazim them in a different beis din. That's as far as Reb Tarfon, who says that it can't be that if they served as an aid, they serve as a dayan. As far as Reb Akiva, who says that even if they just saw it, they can't serve as dayanim, the Gemara elsewhere explains the reason, because Reb Akiva takes the view that dayanim have to look for some kind of schus about the guy. They have to look for ways to exonerate him. If they themselves saw it, they're not going to be able to do that. This is brought in many places in Hasidus to show the idea how much more powerful seeing is than hearing. You hear something, even from the most reliable person, it's not so embedded by you as something that you actually saw. So therefore, when the dayanim hear from the edim, even if they know these edim are 100% trustworthy, nevertheless, they can still say to themselves, you know what, still there might be a reason to exonerate the guy. But if they see it for themselves, there's no possible way they're going to, and therefore Reb Akiva disqualifies them as dayanim altogether. Anyway, the point is, even Reb Tarfon doesn't allow a person to serve as an aid and then turn around and serve as a dayan. So how over here is Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya saying, here's me, meaning I personally saw you do this, and now I'm going to judge the case. So the answer is Kitanyahi Kanchiro Balila. The case is when Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva are arguing is where they saw the event happen by night. And now therefore Deloila Meva Dinaninhu. Now nighttime is not a time when they can judge dinin, when they can judge any kind of case in based in neither dinin mumnus nor dinin afashis. So the next day when they're judging, then they have to have some of them giving aegis because after all, you're having to base yourself on Avis. You're ultimately having to base yourself on something that you hear, because you can't say, I saw it, and therefore I can judge it, because when you saw it was not a time for judging. That is why Reb Tarfon says you can't have that. You can't have people serving as Edim and then as Dayan. But rather, we can say that if they saw it by day, then Reb Tarfon would allow some of them to stand up as Edim and give the Avis, and then sit down as Dayanim and judge the case. Well, therefore, it would come out that Reb Yehuda Nasiya would be agreeing with Reb Tarfon and saying that in this case, the guy did it by day. So we could work it out that way, and we could say Reb Yehuda Nasiya would allow that, and he could judge the case himself. So it comes out, so Rashi says that he'd have to be holding specifically like Reb Tarfon. On the other hand, Tosfos says that no, Reb Akiva says his whole concept only by dinin afrashis, because again, it has to be that they have to be melamed schus on him by dinin mominus. You don't need that, and therefore by dinin mominus, even Reb Akiva would agree that if they saw it by day, they could stand as edim and then sit down and be dayan. So therefore, what Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is saying now could work even according to Reb Akiva. Okay, that's one possibility. Now, another way we could understand what Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is saying, he doesn't mean I saw it. He means, here's me, meaning I hold like Rabbi Yehuda Aglili of the Mishnah, who says that you have to pay a monetzori, and here are Edim, not me, but other people who actually saw you do this, therefore still have their monetzori, and therefore give him a monetzori. So you could say, in other words, that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is not at all saying, I saw it and therefore I'm going to judge you, but rather that he's saying that the fact is, I hold like Rabbi Yehuda said, really, and we have Edim that say that you did this, therefore you're going to have to pay a monetary. Okay. So the Gemara says, the sovereign of Akiva, the Ein Eid Nasa Dayan. Now let's get back to this matter of Ein Eid Nasa Dayan. Does Rav Akiva in fact hold that ein eid nasa dayan, that a person who saw something cannot serve as a dayan on it when it comes to dinin nefashos? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, the pasuk describes v'hika ishas re'eu be'evan oy be'egro. The pasuk describes two people are fighting and one of them hits the other with a one of them hits the other with a stone or a fist. So why does the pasuk have to mention a fist? So Shimon Atimni Omer, Ma Eg, so Shimon Atimni says, the fact that the pasuk says Egroif, a fist, means that we learn from that a binyan af. Ma Egrif miyuchod, what's special about a fist? Shemosu la'eda ula'edin. It's available at all times for the Edom, meaning Beis Din, and for the Edom to evaluate it. Meaning, in other words, when we bring the guy to Beis Din, why'd you hit this guy? His fist comes along with him. Therefore, Beis Din, now we always have to check. The Gemara talks about it in Sanhedrin. You always, and Rashi mentions it briefly over here. You always have to check whenever one person hits somebody else and there's an injury, you always have to check whether the thing that he used is strong enough and was done in a part of the body that would actually be expected to cause this injury. If you have, for example, the guy goes and taps the other guy with his finger, and the other guy falls down dead, we're not gonna be machayev in anything. Cause obviously the other guy is like some kind of weak, delicate person or whatever. So we have to evaluate the fist. How big and how powerful is this fist? And how much of an injury can it cause? And we figure accordingly. So now, Shimon Atimni says, the fist is something that's always available. Cause when you bring the guy to Beis Din, his fist comes along with him. And it's available for the Edom, meaning Beis Din, and for the Edim, so it's available for the Edim when they first saw it happen, and it's available for the Eda to look at. Af kol shemosu la'eda or la'edim. Therefore, Shimon HaTimni says, we learn from that, any kind of weapon that was used to hit somebody, to injure somebody, or to kill somebody for that matter, you always have to have that, because the Pasuk also talks about it. He injures him, and the Pasuk says that only if the guy recovers, then the one who hit him is potter from Nissa, implying that if not, then he's chayiv Nissa. So we're talking about a matter of dinin nefashos over here. So therefore, the egreif has to be available. And the same way, Shimon HaTimni says, any time there was a weapon used to kill somebody, always it has to be available for Beis Din to look at, as opposed to if the Edom lost the weapon, then Shimon HaTimni says you can't judge the case. But the Braisa continues, Omalei Rav Akiva, v'chi b'fnei Beis Din hikohu. So Rav Akiva says, what do you mean? Did he hit him in front of Beis Din, sheyodin kama hikohu, that Beis Din would know how strong the blow was? In other words, fine, they can have the fist available, but they still don't know. You can have the same fist can be used in a stronger or weaker way. They didn't watch that happen. And what part of his body did he hit him on? Imal shoyko oitzipo nafshe. Did he hit him on his leg, where that's much less likely to cause to kill a person, or on sipo nafshe, which is much more likely to? Rashi explains that sipo nafshe is the cartilage of the heart. You have your rib cage underneath it by the pit of your stomach. You have a piece of cartilage that sticks down over there, and if a person is punched over there, then that hurts and that could even kill a person. The Aruch explains slightly differently. He says it means between the neck and the heart, so it would be like the little hole over there, right? Whatever. Anyway, the point is, so Beis Din didn't see that after all, so anyway, they're going to have to depend on the Edim to report that detail to them. But oi, furthermore, Rav Akiva says, Haresha docha peschaveda, Maresha gaga, Maresha bira. Imagine that he killed him by pushing him off a roof or off a tower, or mess, and then the guy dies. Beis Din hochenetz a bira. What's going to happen? Does Beis Din have to go out to the tower to look at it, to look how tall it is, and whether under normal circumstances it would kill? Or bira haylacha seif a Beis Din? Or does the tower come to the Beis Din? Neither one, obviously. We don't make Beis Din go to the tower. The tower itself comes to Beis Din in the sense that the Edim come and testify this tower is X number of feet tall, and Beis Din figures on that basis whether it's likely to kill. But oi, furthermore, Rav Akiva continues, Im nafla chozer boina, and what happens? He pushed him off a tower, and then between when it happened, when the Edom came to Beis Din, the tower collapses. Are we going to make them rebuild the tower so Beis Din can look at the tower in person? Obviously not. Ella. So Rav Akiva says, no, you can't learn from Egroif what you, Shimon HaTimni, are learning, that we should say that Beis Din has to have the murder weapon available in order to look at, to know. It can't possibly mean that because of all these considerations. Ella, rather, Rav Akiva says, I agree that we learned something from Egroif, But rather, what we learn is ma egrif miyuchad shu mosel la'edim. All that is with an egrif, it's available to the edim. The edim themselves can see him hitting the other guy with a fist. So therefore, af kol shu mosel la'edim, all you need is that it's available for the edim to see. Trap l'shiyotze evim tachas yodesh on matter, as opposed to, for example, if he hit him with not it's available for the edim right on the spot, but it's available for the edim afterwards to look at and to say, you know what, yeah, this fist or the stone or whatever that he hit him with is tachas something that a reasonable person would think is capable of killing. So Rabbi Akiva says trap l'shiyotze evim tachas yodesh on matter, as opposed to if the murder weapon was lost right after he hit him. And the Adam can't even see it, Potter, then indeed he'd be Potter.
They don't own something, they killed
it. Because at least it has to be available at the time for the Adam to look at afterwards and see whether this was capable of killing. And then, if possible, they bring it to Beis Din, but if not, as Rabbi Akiva said, they don't have to bring it to Beis Din necessarily, they just have to report on it to Beis Din.
The guy's killed.
The guy's killed, but we don't know. Again, we don't know. It could after all be that he hit him with like a pebble or something and the guy unexpectedly fell down dead, and we can't make the guy chayav misa for throwing a pebble at the guy, because under normal circumstances, that's not going to kill him. Yeah. Anyway, katoni mi, yes, the bottom line is, the Braise is saying, omole Rabbi Akiva, v'chi b'fnei Beis Din hiko, sheyodin pami hiko. Rabbi Akiva is using the expression, did he hit him in front of Beis Din, that Beis Din would know with what he hit him, seems to imply, ho hiko b'fnei eid nasadayin. It sounds like Rabbi Akiva would say that if he did do it in the presence of Beis Din, then they could actually serve as a dayanin. Didn't we say before that Rabbi Akiva says that he can't, because ain't eid nasadayin, even if they only observed it? And the answer is, L'dvorav d'Rav Shimon HaTimni k'amar v'loy loy svirale. The answer is, that svara that Rabbi Akiva is saying is only, he's saying, even according to you, Shimon HaTimni, that you want to learn that the murder weapon has to be brought to Beis Din, but you have all these considerations why. Anyway, Beis Din doesn't know how hard he threw it, and so on and so forth. So he's saying, even according to your own svara, Shimon HaTimni, it doesn't really work out. Myself, I would say Bechlal, that if it was in front of Beis Din, then Bechlal, a different Beis Din would have to convict him, because the Dayanim of this Beis Din are Edim and Eid Nasadayim, and Eid Nasadayim. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva is not contradicting himself, he's just saying, he's arguing against Shimon HaTimni, he's saying, even if one's your Svara, it's hard to learn from the case of Egrif to say that we actually have to bring it to Beis Din, because then how are you going to explain all these other circumstances where we clearly don't have to? The Gemara says, "Tana Rabbanan." Sure. So now we're gonna have a new discussion that's gonna relate back to this machlokas of Shimon HaTimni and Rabbi Akiva about whether we need to bring the actual weapon to Beis Din. So the Gemara says, "Tana Rabbanan." Sure, tam shehenis. If a sure tam killed a person, and we know that sure now is chayav misa, the hizik, and it also injured a person. So it killed one person, and then it also caused nezek. Donin oisid dinin nefashis vein donin oisid dinin mamnis. So you judge the animal with dinin nefashis, and you based and decide that it's chayav skila, you don't judge dinin mamnis. On the other hand, muad shehimis vehizik, on the other hand, if it was a muad that killed a person and then also caused damage, donin oisid dinin mamnis, v'chozin v'donin oisid dinin nefashis. Then first we judge the dinin mamnis, and we make the owner pay, and then we judge dinin nefashis, and we give the ox skila. As we'll explain in the Gemara why that is. And the Braisa continues, kodmu v'donuhu dinin nefashis, if they did it the wrong way around, and they first judged the dinin nefashis, then we do not rejudge it as dinim mamonis. So the Gemara says, why not? So what if they did dinim nefashis first? Before we give the ox skila, we had everle dinim nami mamonis. Why don't we go and also do the dinim mamonis? And after all, with a tam, it's easier to understand, because with a tam, you're paying only migufo of the animal, and once the animal is chayv skila, then it has no more value anymore. But in a mu'ad, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, you're paying min ha'aliyah. Anyway, the owner is paying out of pocket. So what's the difference whether we judge the animal with dini nefashis first? Why is the Braisa saying if you judge dini nefashis, then you can't do dini mamonis anymore? Amar Rava. So Rava says, Ashkachtinu v'rabbanan d'beirav. I found the Chachamim sitting in the Beis Medrash, the Yasri v'ka'amri, and they were sitting and explaining, Hamani Reb Shimon HaTimni. This Braisa would be according to Reb Shimon HaTimni from the previous Braisa. that he said, just like a fist is available to the Eda, to the Beis Din, to look at afterwards, because it can always be brought, because it always comes to Beis Din together with the assailant, and it's available to the Edim. And the same way he says, always the weapon has to be available to Beis Din, meaning, as he said, if the Edim lost the weapon, then he's bonder. Alma be'in umdana de bedina. Therefore, you see that Shimon HaTzimni requires that for Nisa as well as for Nizakim, you always have to have, Beis Din has to be able to see the thing in order to be able to evaluate whether this is the kind of thing that would have been likely to cause this injury. Now, in this case, once they already judge the shur that it's chayiv skila, loy mashinim loy umdana de bedina, we don't want to keep it around any longer than necessary for Beis Din to evaluate it, whether the damage that it caused is in proportion to the actual size of the animal, because we don't want to delay the din. You're not allowed to delay once a verdict has been given, then it has to be carried out as soon as possible. You're not allowed to do inu yadin. You're not allowed to delay it unduly. Now, the reason why you're not allowed to do it is basically because the person suffers agmas nefesh. Here it's a shur, we're not talking about that. Nevertheless, the Ravid points out, we learned earlier in the Masechta, Kemisas Bailin, Kachmisas Ashur, the rules that apply if the owner were to have to be executed also apply to the Shur. Therefore, just like you can't do any Adin by a person, you can't do any Adin by a Shur either. So the result is, once they decided the Shur is Chayv Skila, they're not allowed to keep it around for Beis Din to go and evaluate, well, what's the size of the Shur and what's the whatever, and see whether it's capable of causing this kind of damage. That would be why the Braisa is saying, therefore, these parts are from Dinim Amunus. So only according to Shimon HaTzimni, according to Rabbi Akiva, that's not an issue, because all we need is the Edim will report to Beis Din on what the damage was done, and Beis Din will hear the Edim and decide the case based on that. So that was, Rava says, I heard the Chachmei HaYeshiva saying that. But I, Rava, said to them, no, you could say that this braisa goes even according to Rabbi Akiva, because what we can be talking about is where he ran away. Now, who is it that ran away? Rashi explains it means the owner ran away. So you can't judge the case without the owner being there. The Rambam, on the other hand, understands that it means that the ox ran away. And then the Noisa Kalim and the Rambam deal with why the Rambam would learn that way, and so what? Why can't we judge the case, and why can't we judge the Dinim Amunus unless the ox is there? Anyway, so the Gemara asks, Ibarach, so if we're talking about that he, the owner or the animal, ran away, Pila Januhu Dinin Afashas, Heche Dinin Amunus Velay Bailin. So then in that case, then if we didn't, so even if we didn't judge the Dinin Afashas, then how can we say that first we do the Dinin Mominus? How are we judging the Dinin Mominus in the first place without the owner being there? Again, if you can't judge unless the owner is there, or unless the shur is there, then you can't judge the Dinin Mominus in the first place. So what is the Braisa saying? That if you judge Dinin Afashas, then you can't judge the Dinin Mominus. If the guy ran away, you anyway can't judge the Dinin Mominus regardless whether you did the Dinin Afashas first. The answer is the Kabul Sahad Yuvarach. The answer would be, we're talking about where Beis Din listened to the testimony of the Edim, and only then did the owner run away. So therefore, now Dinin Afashas was first, then since the guy ran away, then still we can't make him pay Dinin Mominus. But Gemara says, Soif, Mehecha Mishtalim. Okay, but if the guy ran away, then how are we going to pay? The fact is, we're saying we judge Dinim Mominus, which means that the Nizek is going to get his payment, but how are we going to do that? If the guy ran away, and if the Mazik ran away, and the answer is, Meridia. What we do is from the plowing. In other words, what we do is, like this. This sure again, it killed and it also caused Nezek. Now, what we're saying is that it's going to be chayav din nefashos, but we also have to pay for the nezek. What we do is, we make the owner keep the ox for a while and use it for plowing, and then rent it out to people for plowing. The money that he gets from renting out the animal for plowing, he'll save up until he has enough to pay the nezek. Once we're done with that, then we'll judge the case of din nefashos and have the shur given skila. So that's not a problem of inu yadin. Inu yadin is only once we have the verdict, then we can't delay before carrying it out. But here, we're not even judging the case until we finish paying off the dinim ominous.
Keeping an employee over here who killed someone.
So you're keeping the shur around, yeah. Tosfos actually wonders that the Gemara says, Alma Mori Breidra Kahana, so we pay from the ridya, from the plowing, then we're going to judge it for dinim ominous and give it skill. I'm skipping a couple lines. Yeah. So Mehecha Mashal Midrida. So the Gemara says Yichochi Tam. So in that case, the same thing by a Tam. Nidaini Dinim Mominus Bereisha V'Nishal Midrida V'Hodin Nidaini Dinim Nefarshes. So why don't we say the same thing by a Tam? The Braisa had said that by a Tam we just judge it Dinim Nefarshes and not Dinim Mominus. Only by a Moor are we judging Dinim Mominus first. So why? If it's a matter of keeping it around to use for plowing, what's the difference between a Tam and a Moor?
Because you pay
Gufroi, fine. But the Gufroi would be that you pay out of the plowing of it. That would be paying out the Gufroi. So you would say, in other words, that this sure can kill the person. It also caused $100 worth of damage. Fine, we're going to rent it out until we've saved up $100 from its plowing. Pay that to the Nizek, and then we'll go judge it to Dinin and Nefarshes. Why is there a difference? Omer of Mori Breid Rakana Zoyse Meres Ridya Aliyah Demoro. You see from that, therefore, that plowing is not considered something that's from the goof of the animal. It's considered an asset that belongs to the owner. So therefore, the same way as a tam, you pay only the goofoi. We had assumed for purposes of the question that the plowing is considered goofoi. Now we're saying that not. The value that you can get out of plowing with an animal is actually considered a separate asset of the owner's, like any other asset of his, any other nechassim of his. Therefore, since it's sure tam, you're paying only the goofoi, then you can't pay out of the plowing of it, because that wouldn't be migufay. That's the point. In other words, the definition of migufay is to actually sell the animal and use the money from it to, and use the money of it to pay. You know, having the animal work, Mori Bredakana is saying, is not considered migufay, that's considered min ha'aliyah. And a tam doesn't pay min ha'aliyah, so therefore you can't do that. Only by a mord you can do that, because a mord you talk of paying min ha'aliyah. Tosfos wonders in that case, then fine, why don't we say that in that case, we'll take the shur, we'll give it to the nizik, and that's that. That's definitely migufoi. And the answer is, because then we're not going to wait. Think of it like this, Tosfos says. Imagine if the owner says, I want you to wait with skila, with this animal, until I can do some more plowing with it. Obviously, Basin is going to tell him, nothing doing. Your animal killed, we have to give it skila. By the same token, we can't say that we should give the animal to the nizik and have him work with it until he's paid off the thing, because that would be, in effect, that would be the same kind of thing. We can delay, in other words, in order to evaluate the animal and in order to get in the case of a moor, where anyway we're not paying the gufoi, then we can do that. But in the case of a tam, where we're paying the gufoi, then no, we don't have that option of delaying in order to giving it to the nizik in order that he can plow or do whatever work with it. No, we have to just take and give it skila, and the nizik's not going to get anything in that case because the animal's being in skila and you're only paying the gufoi. So if it switches owners, then it may not be a moor, but here we're talking about that's not relevant. Here we're talking about a tam. So it remains a tam. The din that's high in this is still going to remain, even if it's transferred to another owner. The din that an animal is a moor and that it pays nezek shalim, and that the owner has to pay a koi for it, to kill the person, that changes if you give it to somebody or sell it to somebody else. But a tam remains a tam.
The way it's stricter, then it's more of a punishment.
No, the point is, in other words, that by a tam, we're saying that the owner. No, what we're saying is the owner is not going to have to pay in the case of the nezek that was done by the tam, because instead the animal is just getting executed by a mord, since it's paying min ha'aliyah. Then we're saying what we should do is we should keep the animal around temporarily, get enough work out of it to pay for the nezek, because that'll be min ha'aliyah. That won't be megufa, that'll be min ha'aliyah, and then we can go ahead and give the animal skila. And therefore, the Braisa had said that if they did it the other way around, then you can't delay the execution anymore, and therefore you have no choice but to do that and forget about the dinim ominous. But the point is, at first we thought that was only according to Shimon Atimini, that the animal has to be available and based in. Now we're saying it actually works out even according to Rabbi Akiva, provided that we're talking about that borach. Because then because Barach, therefore we're not able to judge Dinim Ominous anymore. Had it not been Barach, then we still would be able to do that, because we'd be able to have it plow in between. Or we'd have the owner pay out of something else, rather, yeah.
Goes on the trip, right?